Empire One Productions presents Sports Custodians.
I myself am a master of the custodial arts, or a janitor if you want to be a dick about it.
Your host, 7 foot son, N.J. Daly.
Hello, sports fans. Welcome to the Sports Custodians. I am Seahawk Steve in the brand new Empire One Production Studios with our producer...
Dylan, because I spit hot fire.
Daly is out today, as well as stat guy Sean. Daly out with a sports injury because apparently alcohol and basketball is only a good mix in rap videos. Stat guy Sean's out with some domestic issues, so we will...
Domestic issues? You make it sound like he beat his wife or something.
Well, we won't dive into that.
I think his house was built on a fault line, so yeah. It just keeps falling apart.
we'll get an update with him next week. Today on Sports Custodians, we will be covering the World Cup recap. And apparently, I'm all baseball. We have two new guests today on the Sports Custodians. We have our quote-unquote sports analyst, WTF Jeff, as well as our baseball fanatic, guru, king of all that is baseball, Joey, who will be joining me on Steve's All Baseball today. We also have a new game show, Tennis Grunts or Porno Stunts.
Oh, yeah.
A little Seahawk Steve comedy gold coming at you. We'll see how it works out. And we have another LeBron update as this circus, as Daly liked to quote it a couple episodes ago, continues to roll. We call it the King James version of NBA free agency. Well, I hope we have a great show today, and we'll be right back with the World Cup recap. More Sports Custodians after this.
Nailed it!
Welcome back to the Sports Custodians. Today we're talking about the World Cup, and we're going to do a recap mainly of this week, but we wanted to touch a little bit on the U.S.-Belgium game since we had a lot invested into that. And we had some people within the group talk about, you know, U.S. going all the way. We had Netherlands picked. We had a whole bunch of these predictions, and none of them seemed to work out the way we thought we did. None of us talked about Germany last week. What do you think, Dylan? Do you think... The World Cup is panning out the way it should be, or, you know, more the way it ought?
Well, I think that Brazil playing Germany, that's pretty much how it should have been. Both those teams have been to more World Cups than any other team, so it was kind of obvious that those two were going to play each other. I definitely thought the Netherlands were going to go to the finals, but we'll talk more about that. I did expect to see, as much as we wanted USA to win, and it was kind of forward positive thinking, we all kind of knew they wouldn't, but just for them to go to the knockout round is actually a pretty huge deal.
Well, we saw them getting past Belgium. I think Belgium just got their act together at the right time, because, I mean, they are historically a moderately good team. We saw moments throughout the entire World Cup where they were good this year, but we thought it was U.S. We thought U.S. was going to make a statement. I think going to the knockout round makes a statement, but I don't think it makes a statement we thought it was going to make, or at least me.
Well, the USA have never made it to knockout round twice in a row ever. So, I mean, this obviously the coach, a lot of people don't like him. I don't like him personally, but the coach is doing something right. And in addition to that, Belgium didn't play all that good before the USA game. That's why I thought the USA could really win that one. The only reason why the USA was even in contention to even come back was because of freaking Tim Howard's saves. He had, like, the most saves of any World Cup game in history.
The Beast, exactly.
There's a hashtag going around that was things Tim Howard could save, and they do like all these. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't. That sounds
they
amazing.
Like, they
though.
Like Photoshop him in front of the World Trade Centers and stuff, or it Photoshop him in front of like the conception of Justin Bieber. It's pretty hilarious.
So I mean, with the way that soccer seems to be developing in America,
football.
Excuse me. Do you see the U.S. being a major player the next FIFA World Cup?
I think they're going to work their way up. I don't think the next cup is going to be like all USA gold, you know, going all the way. But I think that it's something that's being built up. And I think you look at other teams, it's not overnight where they start winning. You have to build a team up. For soccer, it takes a little bit longer. It's not like football to where in 2 years, all of a sudden you have a franchise. I think it takes years and years. I think in 10 to 15 years, we'll be a real contender.
Yeah, I agree. I think the next FIFA that comes around, you know, if we get put in another difficult group again, we're going to be seen as the predators and not the victims of the group if it's a tough group. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think we have a real possibility having the World Cup come back to USA again. It was in the USA in 94, I believe, at the Rose Bowl. But I mean, that's the amount of trending that it's generated on social media. It's been the most watched World Cup in history in America, and I think people are starting to buy into soccer. And after watching the Argentina Netherlands game, man, even my girlfriend was on the edge of her seat, and like, we rarely watch soccer, but it's...
Well, before we get to that game, I want to talk about the massacre that occurred against Brazil. I never saw this coming. You know, I was at the gym when this game was taking place, and every time I would watch the game for a few minutes, and it would be 3-0, 5-0, 6-0, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. What caused Brazil to self-destruct so bad? I don't know too much about Germany and Brazil. Honestly, we didn't even consider Germany being a major contender like this. We knew they were going to be in it, but we didn't know they were going to be this dominant. Let's cover the Argentina-Netherlands game really quick. Amazing game, amazing defensive game. Some defense from Argentina that we haven't seen the entire season. Would it have been a better game if the Netherlands would be going up against Germany right now? And was what Sergio Romero did something that Tim Howard did, but the offense managed to come through in this case where the U.S. couldn't do it? I know it's a lot to unpack here, but we'll try to get it.
I don't think you can say that Sergio Romero won this game single-handedly, like I have seen some people on the Twitter and the Facebook say, because they played 120 minutes of this game. And, it takes all that time and all the defenses and stuff. And I think the defenders, not necessarily the goalkeeper, for Argentina kept them alive. I mean, there was three or four saves that were purely just because the defenders were out there.
Absolutely. I thought the Netherlands played a fantastic game. They were, you know, their time of possession for the game was fantastic. I don't think Netherlands has a reputation for having the most amazing defense. So, you know, the capabilities of their goalie does not line up with Sergio Romero's in any shape or fashion. I thought the penalty kickoff at the end was horrendous. I was clenching my fists, you know, every single kick that Netherlands put up. So, but I thought they were a better equipped team to play Germany. I thought, you know, Argentina's kind of one of those teams that, you know, is elite, but they are kind of getting older with their top end players. And Germany, what was the quote we had yesterday, you know, where the guy would name, you know, this team has this player, that team has that player, but Germany has a team. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that kind of goes what I was saying earlier. Like, I don't think it matters who's the all-star on Germany or who's the all-star in Brazil. I think these teams are built to last, and they're like, they're franchises and dynasties to the true meaning. Back in Asia when you had the freaking dynasties for 300 years. I think that's what you see out of soccer. You don't usually see out of other sports.
Absolutely. So a bittersweet day for the U.S. soccer team. An amazing World Cup coming up this weekend. So that about wraps it up for the World Cup recap. Any last thoughts on this, Dylan?
Yeah, this is kind of a different direction for the conversation, but I think that the penalty shots is such a bogus way to end a game because they've been out there playing for 121 minutes, and it's like, all right, so now we'll rest it all on the shoulders of a goalie and try to make, like, nearly impossible saves.
Yeah, it seems like a 50-50 shot. It's the goalie guessing which way the kicker's going.
I don't even think it's 50-50 because then once he guesses where he's going, then he's got to make the save. It's like 75-25.
He's still got the high-low, you know. So, yeah, I mean, it comes down to like a 25%. You start sinking below those odds. You look at the penalty shots, and it looks kind of like hockey. But, I mean, hockey is so much more defendable in those situations. So soccer seems like such a difficult – it does seem like a difficult way to end an overtime game.
It seems like a schoolyard like shootout for the World Cup stage. I mean, I'm not saying I really have a better scenario right now, but you know, it's maybe pull the goalies.
No, I agree. I had the same feelings when I was watching the penalty kicks yesterday. All right, we'll be right back with our new analyst, WTF Jeff. More Sports Custodians after this.
Done it. Oh, hell no, boy. Y'all done up and done it. Oh, hell no, man. Y'all done up and done it. Oh, y'all done up and done it, man. Y'all come up and done it. My first song was like 48 bars with no hook. You hear me flipping through my pages out my favorite notebook. Microphones in the closet. No headphones. We lost.
Welcome back to the Sports Custodians. We have our new analyst today, WTF Jeff.
What?
Giving us his take on the sports world.
Who?
We asked them a couple questions today, and these are the responses that we got.
Okay, so how will Kyle Seager do after the All-Star break? Well, let me break it down for you. He sort of looks and resembles Frodo Baggins from Middle-Earth, a.k.a. Elijah Wood. And I think it's a good hypothetical to start from, because the guy, when he first starts out, is living like a little wimpy hobbit in the Shire, not doing much, not really making a name for himself. And then he finds a ring. Now, this ring keeps him invisible for a while, and after a short bit, he takes the ring off by the power of Middle Earth and starts slamming home runs. Now, keep in mind, this will make sense shortly, but when you think of that, and then you think, well, it's kind of like Sauron mixed with an alligator, you get the gist of what I'm trying to say. Basically, he's gonna be fine. Answer done. Boom.
With all due respect, what the fuck are you talking about?
Thank you, WTF Jeff. Your statements are always so clearly stated and descriptive. It made perfect sense to me. What do you think, Seahawk Steve?
Insightful.
Great story. Compelling and rich.
After this break, Steve's all baseball. We hope you enjoy it. We are the Sports Custodians.
In football, the object is for the quarterback, otherwise known as the field general, to be on target with his aerial assault, riddling the defense by hitting his receivers with deadly accuracy, in spite of the blitz, even if he has to use the shotgun. With short bullet passes and long bombs, he marches his troops into enemy territory, balancing this aerial assault with a sustained ground attack which punches holes in the forward wall of the enemy's defensive line. In baseball, the object is to go home and to be safe. I hope I'll be safe at home. Safe at home.
Welcome back to the Sports Custodians. I am Seahawk Steve in the studio here with Dylon and our special guest, Joey.
Oh, hi, I'm Joey. I don't know what you want me to say.
I like that. So the topic of the day today is new MLB teams and the overall competitiveness of the MLB. We're looking at new powerhouses such as Baltimore, Toronto, Kansas City, Seattle, Milwaukee, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh. Three divisions where 3 to 4 teams per division are 500 or better midseason. AL East, the AL West, and the NL Central. The biggest stories of the year as far as shifts in dominance and teams that are now in the running that have been in long-standing slumps. We're looking at the Seattle Mariners, the Kansas City Royals, and the entire NL Central Division. Kansas City finished third last year at 86-76. Not bad for a team that had been prolifically bad the years preceding it. The Brewers finished a horrid 74-88 last year. The Mariners fared no better at 71-91. Teams on the way out, the Tampa Bay Rays, New York seems to be in decline, and maybe a slump for the Cardinals. We'll see how that works out later in the year. What I want to know is, are these new MLB powerhouses here to stay, and what is causing the MLB to be one of the most competitive sports in America today? Joey.
Well, the aging New York Yankees, the reason why they're in decline is because they have no one, they've traded away most everybody over the years that they've had in their stock for greater players, and now a lot of those players are in decline, so that's why they're starting to sink out of it. The strangest thing would be the Boston Red Sox, who won it last year, how terrible offensively they are doing, and they have four starting rookies in their lineup out of 9 batters, which is almost half your team, so that's what's really making them kind of sour this year a little bit, is the fact that they've been relying predominantly on rookies lately because of injuries. The Mariners, which is nice to see that they're starting to come out of it. They've actually made a couple of moves in some of the younger players.
Oh, I'm all about the Mariners, Joey. We know this.
Yeah, I love them. And the Royals, they have a lot of young players, which they're starting to come out of it. You'll notice with the Indians, too, they got some young players. Tampa Bay, I'm a little bit surprised, although lately they've been picking it up quite a bit. They have some injuries, which is the reason why they're kind of down and out of it with their starting rotation with, like, Matt Moore. And Alex Cobb has been kind of off and on a couple of times this year. There's so much other pitcher.
So what you're saying is, like, a lot of these teams appear to be on their way out, but some of them maybe aren't. It's just the injuries that are making it appear that way.
Yeah, with the Boston Red Sox, it's more of the injuries with them. With the Yankees, it's the elderly people that are
elderly.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Kansas City, the Brewers, and the Mariners, are these just rebuilding processes that are finally beginning to succeed, or are, you know, some of these teams, I know the Mariners have been rebuilding for a long time. It looks like they're basing all of their acquisitions off young talent that they're trying to develop. You look at Kansas City and the Brewers, are they just stacking vets on a couple-year contracts, or have they been in the same process as the Mariners?
I would say Brewers and Royals in particular have been picking it up quite a bit with the young players, and you can see the progression in the young players to where they are now. The Mariners is the first year in a while that they've been doing that, so I can't say that for sure, although they have some good-looking players right now that look like they can do pretty well, although this year they definitely need to grab a right-handed bat or two that has some pop to kind of counterbalance the Seager and Robinson Cano duo.
So do you like a Bird pickup or a Soriano pickup? Do you have any preference in these? Do you want to sign them to short-term contracts so that we don't have to make trades for their younger talent to do this?
I think whoever you pick up, you gotta go with, like, someone who has a batting average, someone who can hit the ball consistently, because they have a lot of power in Seattle, but their batting average is one of the worst in the league. At least last time I checked, it was the worst, but with the last couple weeks stretch, I'm sure they've came out a little bit. But their batting average this year and for the last 3 years has just been horrendous. I think you need a guy like Ichiro when he was there. You need a guy who can get a base hit on a consistent basis, because that puts a guy in position to score.
Go ahead, Joey.
Oh, sorry. The best way to do that is kind of with the Marlon Byrd. The reason why I would not this year, because of the A's and Angels, I wouldn't want to try to trade away a bunch of talent that would you have a harder chance making it this year. But if you can get him on a fairly long term on a good deal, like Marlon Byrd for power, because it adds that kind of ability, that power ability, which is kind of like it puts people in a different position and it kind of sets it up to where people can get more likely to get base hits and he can get walks so they can get more people on base and he can, you know, the threat of the 3-run homer will be there. So that's good, but also like an Alex Rios from the Rangers, he would also be a good pickup for that. The reason why Soriano, I'm iffy about it. The reason I'd get him with somebody else, and that's only because he's aging, and you could kind of put him there every once in a while with like a left-handed hitter or pitcher in there, so that he can bat like switch and rotate in there because in the outfield a little bit, so it would kind of help out to give a little bit of power for that. And then with right-handers, you have like Saunders, James Jones, and Ackley and stuff like that in the outfield, which would be the best way to go against a righty.
Yeah, I think the Mariners have some amazing talent. If you look in their AAA ball, too, they have a lot of prospects that are going to be potential all-stars coming in the future.
Or so they keep promising.
Well, there's a lot of other teams that are only willing to make trades with the Mariners based off of talent they have. And they have a horrendous history of giving up amazing talent in the past. You look at the Eric Bedard, Adam Jones trade, and it's something that they've been slapping their foreheads since, you know. You look at a couple other acquisitions in the past, and they've done the same thing. They're trying to avoid that, which I respect a lot. When you look at Kansas City, the Brewers, and Pittsburgh, and a lot of these new up-and-comers, do they have as many holes as perhaps a ball club like the Mariners have? Or do you see teams that are built to last with them as well?
They're built to last for the most part. If anything, it would be with the... Their pitching has gone down with the Pirates, although they've started to pick it up, like you saw their record lately. So they're in the over 500, and they're only a few games out of first place. So they need to find that power that they've kind of lost a little bit. They don't have anyone really, because Pedro Alvarez, the third baseman, he bats like lower, sixth or seventh in the lineup, and he drove in 100 runs last year. It's nice to have a guy like that, but he's batting just barely above the Mendoza line, which is not good. So they need to find someone to help protect Andrew McCutchen, because otherwise they're just going to kind of pitch around him, you know, kind of like what we kind of expected with Cano, and every once in a while Smoke at the beginning of the season, and then Seager was able to kind of step it up a little bit, so they didn't pitch as much around him, which is kind of nice. But that'll happen if they don't find someone, or someone starts hitting behind him with some consistent bases.
Now I want to move on to kind of a bigger outlook on the league itself. And I kind of want to throw this element of discussion in there. Does this new addition of the wild card put us in a situation where the entire league is fluctuating consistently? Does it eradicate dynasties like we've seen in the past with the MLB, where you just see the playoffs, you just see the same five teams in there every single year? I find when I look at the league over the last couple years, you see this constant shift throughout the division every single year. Everybody's in it. And it's because this new wild card provides motivation. It's like we're still mathematically in it in situations in the past where we wouldn't be. So you look at these teams consistently still trying to build, still trying to do things throughout the season instead of, you know, just giving up early in the season and saying, okay, we're going to rebuild and we're going to see if we can hit this early the next year and see if we can get a lead on these teams. Is this creating a more competitiveness in the MLB?
Well, it's still too early to really know for sure, but definitely they've added, it's added a bit to the mix, because we could start to see they just brought that in. And like I said, some of those teams have a younger talent that's kind of gelling right now, so it's kind of hard to tell for sure. But that fact that some teams are still in it and can shoot for it, that definitely is there. So that's probably a big possibility. We'll know over time to see kind of the shifting for sure. Like I said, some aging teams and some younger teams that are just starting to get the peak of their career.
And I think that the general of people watching the sport, I think when you have a team that barely makes the playoffs and then ends up going real far in the playoffs, it's going to draw more people to watch the sport. And for a sport that needs that more than ever right now, I think the wild card is a great idea.
I agree. I think baseball is making amazing resurgence as far as popularity and viewership, especially when you look at the statistics I stated with the divisions, where you look at how many are sitting at 500, how even the records are, and it puts every fan in it. You know, as a Mariner fan in the past, you know, by June I wasn't even watching the games anymore, and I'm sure there was there was, you know, a number of other teams like that, where you look at these teams 2 months in, I don't watch it anymore because I already know we're out. Whereas this situation where everybody's in, still in it, you know, you're dragging viewership out to possibly August in a lot of these situations for three or four of the teams in the division. Is so to kind of tie this back to what you were saying, Joey, you think that this isn't purely a product of the wild card situation, that possibly the evenness within the divisions that we're looking at is a product of teams that are consisting of aging players transitioning and going into their rebuilding phases, and these teams who have been building in the past are now coming into their age. You just see it as possibly a transitional period?
It either that or a combination of both, and I think it's a combination of both. I definitely believe that it's adding quite a bit to it. It's adding part of that extra element to who it's, where teams can actually shoot for that. So they're no longer, well, I'm mathematically out of my division and I'm mathematically out of that wild card. Wait, I still have a chance at the second one. They can try for it, which draws more fans. If they're, the longer they are in it, the more fans are in it, the more they want to see it, which it kind of brings to a next point of what we had discussed earlier yesterday, was the fact that they need to kind of come up with a series instead of a one-game playoff with those, to kind of add more, even more fans to it, kind of adds a little different element. Because just getting to that fact, you want to talk about that at all? Or
yeah, we can absolutely approach the situation with the wild card, where it is the two teams advancing do have a one-game playoff that then advance to the next round, and it seems kind of controversial in people's opinions whether this should be a one game series or a three game, or a one game playoff or a three game series, because typically throughout the season in baseball you find yourself in series. Teams are adjusted to series, and then all of a sudden you put them in a one game situation and the whole dynamic of the game changes. I don't think a lot of people realize that. And then you look at the playoffs, you know, following that, and it develops. It goes from a five-game series to a seven-game series to a seven-game series. So logically, you would conclude that that should be a three-game series. Go ahead, Dylan.
I think that having it a one game is interesting, man. I think that if we had more games like that, it'd be more interesting to watch. I mean, one and done, you have one more chance. It's not like these guys are in the top of their divisions and they're getting screwed over. You know, they barely made it, and now they have one more game to make the playoffs.
The problem with that is use your ace to make that in that last game or two, your top two pitchers, to get to that point just to be able to make that final, the second wild card. When you're going in with that fourth or fifth starter against their first or second pitcher.
How long after the last game is the wild card game?
Right after.
Really? Oh, yeah. Okay, I can see that then.
Yeah, and I was advocating, they play 162 games. You shorten that season up 1 week and then put those three-game series in there. Joey was arguing at one point the other day that you don't even need to shorten the season up to perhaps get those three-game series in. It only takes a few days.
No, because there's a couple days in between the end of the season and the beginning of the playoffs, because there's always that just in case of a one-game playoff before this. Because the 95 Mariners, they had a one-game playoff, which put them into the division series. That's how they got there, was they tied and they had to make the wild card. Boom, they had to play the Angels, I believe is what it was, to make it.
Right. Oh, yeah, I misunderstood that then, absolutely.
I don't think you really need a break. It's baseball. They play almost every day of the year. So it's a format they're used to, and I think carrying it right into a three-game series and then carrying it right into the playoffs would be ideal.
Yeah, I don't think it's unreasonable. I think they have a large enough pitching roster that you're not wearing out anybody's arm. I think you're right when you look at Joey's point that you are using a lot of people in the rotation to get to that point, and then you're kind of burning yourself out as far as the pitchers you have available when you get into the next round.
Welcome to baseball, though.
Yeah, it's a strategic element.
Plus, it can also be kind of beneficial to a certain extent, because if you go into a series like that, you get a chance to get some of those guys still pitches in there. Because otherwise, if they're getting ready for, like, let's say you're in the wild card, or you're in the wild card, and you make it, it gives a chance for those other pitchers to kind of get pitches in there. And if you keep going, if you don't want to, like, stop pitching, if you get out of that rotation because they're used to, like, a schedule, if you get too long a break or too short a break, it's detrimental, and that's the problem.
But I think part of having a good team is having a good bullpen. You can't say they're a good team because they have one good pitcher. I mean, if you want to be a good team, you want to make it to the playoffs and far in the playoffs, you got to have a good five-man rotation or six-man.
Yeah, but then that's the five-man rotation. Most people have one or two, maybe a third, but the fourth or fifth starters kind of are there to hopefully eat up some innings. They're not nowhere near. They're usually either guys that are aging or rookies or people that really just haven't really developed where they should be or could have been or could be, but they show some signs, but they're always prone to that inning. So that's why their ERAs are higher. They don't win as many games. They're taken out of the rotation if, like, there's an off day and the ace is going to be pitching and should have been pitching the next day after their game, but that's an off day. The reason why they just dump him and go with the ace again, because no one has a great five-man rotation, except for now, I'd say the A's. Mariners have some good pitchers, but they don't have that. Tampa Bay, if they had that more, they got three, maybe four good pitchers with Archer, Price, Matt Moore, and Cobb. But their fifth starter, they don't really have it yet. They got, like, a Hellickson, I think his name is.
Well,
but...
and I feel like the whole level that pitching's at in baseball is at one of the highest. I think you look at the era prior to this, and hitting was where it was at. You looked at a lot of players who were hitting monstrous amount of homers every single year, and you don't see that as much anymore. I think pitching is dominating the league overall. We need to start wrapping this topic up, so I did have some final questions on this. You kind of look at the standings right now. There's some teams you know that are going to be in it, but when you look at the wild card, you're like, I do not know. I just want to get your predictions on who gets the wild card this year.
Oh, it's kind of hard to tell. I definitely think the Oakland and the Angels, whoever wins the division, the other one's going to win the wild card. The first one, obviously. And then the second one, I would say it's going to come out of I'm hoping it's the Mariners, because they've got a team this year, because I can't see anyone else in the Central or the East doing anything that really shows in these really big strides. They can go on kind of streaks, but nothing really sustains it long enough. If you look, the East is not that great. We would be at the Mariners would be essentially at the top or a game out. At the Central, they'd be a couple games out of first place, I think, if not first place.
I got the Dodgers. I think the Dodgers or San Francisco, same scenario that you said with the AL West. You got the NL West. I think whoever wins that division, the team under him is going to take it. Because the Dodgers fell into a slump there in the middle of the first part of the season. But I think they're back, and I think they're going to – that's who I have winning the World Series. But I think either they get the wild card and San Francisco wins, or the other way around.
I do know it's going to be really close in the – if you look at the NL Central, that's probably the scariest division other than the three teams in the AL West.
I was just about to say the NL would be the hardest predictions for me to make overall, because you do have that NL Central that could eat them all up, you know? Great conversation. I want to thank Joey for joining us. We hope to have him in future segments, especially involving baseball.
Never forgetting.
Dylan, you got any last thoughts?
Well, I just wanted to ask Joey, while we have this great baseball mind in the studio, what do you attest the Brewers right now to their losing streak? I mean, they've lost five in a row, and they're second, third best team in baseball.
Pitching and not clutch hitting, basically pitching, because Peralta was a couple games ago. I have on my fantasy team, he was given a lead 5-1 or something in the first or second inning, and he gave up 9 runs that game. So it's been the starting pitching, but I think they'll start to bring it together with Loesch and Peralta. He's been pitching good all year except for the last, like, one or two outings, so.
Fantastic. More Sports Custodians after this.
When the day comes for that last winning run, and I'm crying and covered in beer. To the sky, and though I was right to think someday we'll go all the way. Yeah, someday we'll go all the way. Yeah, someday we'll go all the way. Yeah, someday.
Welcome back, sports fans. We got a message in from our monthly sports games analyst, Stuart Scott. Let's hear his update.
Hey, sports fans. This is Stuart Scott here with your monthly sports video game update. Guys, shut up and do a podcast. You have slain an enemy. Today we're going to be talking about Madden 15. With Madden 15, they have a new aspect of the game called PlayerSense 2.0. 2.0 creates the smartest playing Madden ever by improving player emotion and awareness. Everyone thinks that this game is just going to be just like any other Madden game, but they are wrong. It's just really not true. The play calling has been upgraded. The war in the trenches is even dirtier than ever. They still have yet to add any role-playing aspects to the game, so it's not going to make my top 10 list. But the game is going to be a good one in regards to the sport. I think this is going to be my list. Come on, guys, shut up. I'm trying to record a podcast. Well, that's it for my monthly sports video game update. This has been Stuart Scott. You can find me on League of Legends and World of Warcraft and sometimes Second Life by the name of RogersWizards37. Back to you guys in the Sports Custodian Studio. They're about to destroy our Nexus. Shit. Good thing we got super minions.
Thank you so much, Stuart Scott, for that compelling update and that, I believe, was League of Legends in the background. Was it not, Dylon?
I think it was.
Just to clarify.
So we're going to jump straight to the LeBron and Do or Die update after this break.
Welcome back, sports fans. We're here with Dylon, and still remaining in the studio is our baseball fanatic, Joey, but we're going to talk about something a little bit out of his realm today, LeBron James. We're just going to give you an update about the circus going on around him. Some interesting things, despite all the media hype, there's been some developments within the free agency situation revolving around LeBron that we're going to talk about today. So I first want to give you guys a little update. He seems to be waffling when it comes to the teams he's going on. He's having meetings with the Lakers. He's having meetings with the Bulls. He's having meetings with Houston. Apparently, Bosch and Wade are a little conflicted when it came to their little triumvirate that they were trying to figure out, where they were going to settle for less money and let LeBron take more money when they realized they could test the market and get substantial amounts of money from other teams that saw them as the prospective leaders of the games. You all of a sudden get this left field thing with the Cavs where they're dropping three players, they're opening up $20 million in the salary cap, and all of a sudden that's back in the conversation with LeBron. In previous episodes, me and Stat Guy were saying he's going to the Lakers as well as Carmelo Anthony. I think that seems less likely at this point, but I'm not willing to completely count it out. I think Carmelo's high possibility he still goes there. LeBron still has possibilities going there. Going there as a couple, I see some problems with it with some of the as a couple. Get it? Neck.
Holding hands.
We're getting sued, guys. It's okay. So let's first touch on Dylon and get his opinion about the new developments within the LeBron drama, and then we'll see what Joey has to say about it.
Well, I'm still sticking with LeBron staying with the Heat. Sources say that he's either going to Heat or Cleveland. Sources supposed to be close to him. And I just don't see Cleveland a viable option for him. He's met with many other teams. A lot of those team sources says they didn't agree on anything. I think he's coming back to the Heat. I think it's all just a ploy to see what's out there and renegotiate a contract. And I think the whole team's going to come back. I don't think he's going to go to Cleveland.
So it seems to be the running. He's going out for the money and partially the rings, partially the money, partially the rings. The running offers that he seems to get are stemming around $20 million a year. Do you think he can get more than that and still compete for a ring? Do you think the Lakers or the Bulls or Houston are going to be able to provide the $20 million that the Heat and the Cavs are saying that they can give him?
No, I don't think they can. I think that's why he's narrowed his decision down. I think he's meeting with these other teams, and they're probably trying to convince him to take pay cuts or trying to convince him that they want to build a dynasty around him. I think he's not an idiot. I think he knows what he has in Miami. You have a manager who's been around for a long time, since the 70s and 80s, and watched the Lakers win and watched the Celtics win and helped some of those teams win. You have an organization and you have teammates. I think they're building a dynasty, and I think they want to make Miami Heat, you know, 25, 30 years from now, Miami Heat's going to be one of those teams that they talk about. Remember the Celtics, remember the Lakers, remember Miami Heat in the 2000s.
I have no idea which way he's going to go for sure at all. I wouldn't even really want to be able to really take much of a guess. All I know for sure, or all I can really speculate on, is he's already got a couple of rings. Is it two? Does he have three?
He's got two with the Heat currently, okay. Yes.
He's got two. So it's not like he's going after his first one. I think he's going to go after... most likely, what I think is he can see how much he can get out there, and that's probably what he'll end up doing, unless he's still hungry for the championship. I see him going for the money, and he could go over the Heat, because if they're going to get rid of Bosch and open up a little bit more space with him and Wade going or whatever. But he could be still really hungry. I don't see him going back to Cleveland. That's highly unlikely, because they just signed, what was it, Lowry or whatever.
Well, so. they just created some salary cap space over there, and they're making moves to pretty much show LeBron, like, hey, we're ready to offer you whatever Miami can offer you. The Cavs are going to offer LeBron whatever Miami can.
They just offered Kyrie Irving max contract, right? So if they bring LeBron in, and I mean, LeBron's an egomaniac, plain and simple, probably more so than your average player. Does he... they can't give him more money than they gave Kyrie Irving. So how does he – that's the reason I don't count him in the cast. I don't think he goes in being the second highest paid player. He was never the highest paid player when he was there. I think Shaq got more money than him at the frickin' toe end of his career. So, I mean – and I think with Joey's point, does he go for the money? Does he not? I think it's a composition of the both. I think his career is far from over. He's going to try to – get those rings. He's going to try to set those precedences, set those records, beat out Michael Jordan, have all these chips on his shoulders saying he's the best basketball player. But at the same time, he's not willing to take a pay cut to do so, because it's persona, it's perception. Go ahead, Joey.
Oh, definitely, because he's never – I just saw a stat on his 11-year career. He's never been the most paid player on his team. So he's never done that. So he has a chance now to do that, and he's arguably the best player in the league. I mean, some might say, like, Durant is his chance to take it over. Some might say, I don't know, at some point, Love or something. Probably not. But, I mean, there's, like, he's essentially the best player in the game right now. So I see him wanting to get paid like that, because why not? Because he's not, like you said, he's not striving for it. So it's more individual records than it is for team records right now.
I think... from his aspect, money is a part of it, but it's number two or three on the list. I think that him, first of all, you have him wanting to go to Cleveland. He wants to go back to Cleveland, maybe not necessarily to play basketball, but in general, he wants to be in his home in Cleveland, and he's very open about saying that. That's their home. And when his wife posted that tweet the other day, our stupid tweet of the week last week, she was simply saying that the countdown to go home for vacation. She tried to clarify that she didn't mean that LeBron's actually going there. But he's open. He says he would love to play with the Cavaliers, but he's going to play for a team that best works for him. And he, you know, it seems like he got his vacation out of the way. He's meeting with his family. He's met with the Cavs, and he says he will not make a decision until he sits down with the mob boss, Riley, and talks with him. And if you saw that Riley interview, I do not see how Riley doesn't convince LeBron to stay. I would bet pretty much all the cards I have that he's staying in Miami.
I just want to, because I've been considering this as I watch this whole kind of act unfold. Pat Riley is a down-to-business guy. You look at the contract strategizing that Bosch, Wade, and LeBron did, and it completely went tits up. You look at kind of like LeBron waffling on Pat Riley. Does this impact Pat Riley's decision to keep LeBron there? I mean, if he knows that this is devolving into a mess and that it would be simpler just to look for someone else that's going to be simpler, is there any trade-off there?
If you look at his belief system, he believes in LeBron James, and he's very open into believing that whoever has LeBron James and puts someone with LeBron James, like he mentioned the Jordan Pippen. If you have Jordan Pippen, you throw that third guy in there, like, those guys are the reasons why they won championships. You know, it's not soccer where you have a whole team playing together. You know, the NBA doesn't operate like the NCAA college basketball. You have two or three guys that win you the tournaments, and he wants the Miami Heat to be, like I said, like the Lakers, like the Celtics, and he understands that LeBron isn't just another player that you're going to go find. LeBron is going to go down in history as one of the top three best players. It went right up there with Kobe and Jordan, and he knows that, and he's going to do whatever he can. Like you said, he's straight down to business, so whether he gets mad at him for waffling, like, that's, I think it's out of the question. Knowing you have the opportunity to have LeBron James on your team, that trumps everything.
Is there a line to this, though, if the contract strategizing becomes a disaster and Bosch and Wade end up leaving because of that? Does that impact the team? Does that impact how he feels about LeBron interacting with the team?
Completely. If Riley's position isn't just to talk LeBron into staying, Riley has to convince the other guys to stay. If they don't stay, LeBron's not going to have a reason to stay. You know, like we talked about last week, the frustration was he felt like no one else was doing anything on the team. He was carrying the team on his shoulders. If everyone else leaves, there's no way he's going to talk him into staying. He would rather go play with Kyrie Irving, who Kyrie Irving is one of my favorite players. I think he's one of the most talented, like, point guards all around, but he needs help down there. If you put Kyrie and LeBron together and you get a real, real good center down there. I don't know who's playing center.
When they released these three guys to open up cap space, it seems like they lost a lot of their medium support players for players like Kyrie Irving when they do this. I think if they're gonna do this way and LeBron somehow, some way by hook or crook makes it over to Cleveland, they're going to have to go with rookies to try to replace that, because they're not going to be able to bring in any Ray Allens or Ricky Pierces or anything to make up those support services. Potentially, if that happens and the rookies pan out, I see it being successful. If you just have Kyrie Irving and LeBron trying to carry that entire team, I think that turns into a disaster. I personally don't want to see him back at the Heat. I'm just kind of burnt out on the Heat. You know, Pat Riley's a great coach, and he's, that team's always going to be good with or without LeBron. If you want to go into like the fantastical, compelling stories, I think him and Carmelo going to the Lakers would make for an amazing season, just to see what happens. You have Kobe over there, you have Ricky Pierce over there now, you have Gasol. I think you see a team. I think LeBron, and that's why LeBron's considering the Lakers. I think he looks at that and he sees the media advantages to that. He sees the capabilities of that team,
like, yeah.
And he says this could be a marketing dream and this could be a dynasty dream.
And that's the points that Sean was making last week. He'll make up his any cuts he'll take. He'll make up instantly with the media down there, but they've pretty much already ruled that stuff out. Like, the update on LeBron is it's Cleveland or Miami. That's the general consensus, unless he's holding the cards real close to his chest.
Yeah, absolutely. I see the likelihood of it declining by the week. It was on the rise there for a couple weeks, and I was calling that. I'm probably going to end up being wrong about it, but if it happens, I think it'd be something that will make our jobs a lot more fun, as well as some other sportscasters out there. Any last thoughts on this, Joey?
Not really. You guys pretty much hit it with LeBron. I can't really say too much more. I mean, because everyone's kind of speculated
banging
on it.
On our baseball guy for basketball tips. I know. Yeah, I know.
And it's not fair because this subject has just been beat to death by everyone. We kind of have to cover it, you know, just to give our take on it. And my last thought is I hope he doesn't – I think he will stay in Miami. I hope he does it, because I really want to see Joel eat that that whole order of those Buffalo Wild Wings hottest, and then take a shot of hot
sauce. Gargling the sauce.
and a shot of whiskey right afterwards.
How do you feel, Joey?
I feel a little bit drunk.
Sweet. How about you, Dylan?
You're getting drunk off that monster. A little bit. I feel pretty good, man. Pretty good about this episode. All right.
I am fantastic. We were short a few guys, but we pushed through, and I think we had a great show. We'll be back next Thursday or Sunday.
Hopefully with the full crew.
Yeah. We'll be back next Thursday, hopefully with everybody intact. All right. Well, that about wraps it up for the Sports Custodians. You all have a great week, and we'll see you next time. If we're not getting worse, we're getting better. Or the vice versa.